Gamley, this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This month, new federal rules kicked into place affecting almost anyone who wants to buy a home this year. Regulators call it a return to responsible lending, imposing a more sober approach to the mortgage business after the real estate frenzy of the mid-2000s led to a housing crash and a recession. These changes include tougher scrutiny of borrower qualifications and their ability to pay, also new limits on the size of loans backed by the Federal Housing Administration, and new lender information that must be given to consumers. Many, including in New Hampshire, are applauding these rules as a way to prevent the market from overheating again. But some worry the regulations may go too far, making it too difficult for moderate-income Americans to achieve that dream of home ownership and dampening housing's recent recovery. Today in The Exchange, what's ahead for housing? Let's hear from you. If you're in the market as a buyer or seller or renter, what are you seeing? And what do you think we've learned from the mistakes of the housing past? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on Facebook. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have three guests for the hour. Russ Thiebaud is here, president of Applied Economic Research in Laconia. Russ, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Also with us, Dave Solomon, business reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. He's been following the real estate market. And Dave, thanks for making some time for us.
Glad to be here.
Also with us, Ignatius McClellan, Director of Home Ownership at New Hampshire Housing. And Ignatius, good to have you. Thank you for your time
as
well.
Thank you.
Well, all of you, there's been talk for the last year, maybe even two, that New Hampshire Housing is doing pretty well. But Russ Thiebaud, always with housing. Depends on who you are.
Exactly.
Who's it better for? Let's focus on that first.
Well, I think it's better for most homeowners, first of all, in the state. Prices are up about 8%. The days on market, how long it takes to sell a house, is down. The inventory is lower, which means there's fewer houses competing with yours if you put it on the market. So by and large, owners have done pretty well in this market, and buyers also, because interest rates are low, housing, although they've gone up in the last half of the year, housing is more affordable than it has been in a long time.
That's interesting. So this is a weird place where it's actually decent for both buyers and sellers? Because usually you hear people say, seller's market, buyer's market.
Yeah, we're kind of in that sweet spot right now, have been. Although, if you look at it, there's also signs of distress. It's not a perfect market situation. We still have a lot of foreclosures. Last year, about 2,500 properties hit the foreclosure skids. And nationally, about 1 in 5 homeowners is still underwater. So we're in shallower water, but we're not out of the water totally.
Interesting. What do you think, Dave Solomon, that sweet spot where it's decent for homeowners and also decent for those who are looking to buy?
Well, I think it's accurate that you pointed out that the housing market is a place where whether you're ahead of the game or behind depends on exactly who you are and where you're at. The key indicator of a recovery to a homeowner is whether the current market value of that home exceeds, first of all, the value of their mortgage, and second of all, what they paid for it. And we are seeing very slow improvement in prices. What I've been looking for is some path that's going to take us to a return to the prices that existed at the middle of the last decade, because that's where a lot of homeowners are looking for the value of their home to get back to. And until it gets back there, they're not going to feel like it's in a recovery. Housing, the median price peaked at $270,000 in 2005. It dipped to, got down to as low as $200,000 to $201,000 as recently as 11, only went up to 2002 in 12 and 2005 in 13. And the head of the Realtors Association at a recent conference predicted we won't see a median of 270 until 2018.
Good question for you, Dave, on that. And this gets into the psychology of real estate and sort of how regular people who aren't experts in this assess what's really going on. Is that a reasonable level to hope for, Dave? Prices in the mid-2000s, we all know now that that was a bubble. So maybe that isn't reasonable to expect, hope, that prices will return to that level.
Well, given the history of the real estate market in this state and nationally, I don't think it's unreasonable for a homeowner who bought a house in 2005 to expect to see basically zero appreciation for 13 years. Over the course of this deep recession.
Looking ahead to 2018.
Obviously, prices, we couldn't have afforded to have the 15 to 20% appreciation we were seeing per year. The market would just go completely out of reach. But I don't think it's unreasonable that by 2018 we should at least be back at prices we were seeing in 2005. And I think that's when the homeowner in New Hampshire who bought between 03 and 08 is going to feel the recovery.
I want to ask you, Russ, too, about that whole psychology thing. But to you, Ignatius McClellan, first, as we look at who the housing market is good for, who it's not so good for, I'd love your thoughts on that question as well.
The quick summary would be that for folks who are buying today, great time to buy. Prices are good. Interest rates, even though they've risen, are still historically very low. For renters, remains a very challenging market, very limited inventory, some concerns about the conditions of the properties, and the median rents have held steady or increased over the long run. I think the other folks we shouldn't forget, foreclosures, while they are going to be down, they're probably going to be 2,700 from last year, and we hope they continue to go down. It's still historically very high. Before the recession, 500 foreclosures a year was more the norm. So we shouldn't forget that while foreclosures are down, and that's an overall good thing for people and for the economy, we shouldn't forget that a lot of people still are at risk of losing their home to foreclosure.
Wow. So even though we've seen lots of headlines about how great it is that foreclosures are down, 500 foreclosures a year was the traditional number here in New Hampshire. 2,500 then compared to that is still a lot.
It is. And at the peak, we were at 4,000. And so it's good to see that the trend seems to be pretty strong in the downward direction, but we shouldn't forget that there are now still 2,500 people who will probably get foreclosed on in this year.
That makes a big difference.
It does. And I would like to put one plug in for Home Help NH and the New Hampshire Foreclosure Task Force, which are specifically set up to help at-risk folks, and they just need to call 211 for counseling or legal assistance, because the state of New Hampshire has put together a great effort to help these people who are at risk.
All right. Well, lots more to follow up on based on all the stuff that you gentlemen said. I also want to invite our listeners to join us. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking at what's ahead for housing in 2014. If you're in the market as a seller, a buyer, a renter, what are you seeing? And what do you think we have learned from all that the housing market has been through over the past 5, 6 years? 1-800-892-6477 is the number here in the exchange. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Russ Tebow, back to you. Dave Solomon mentioned this, and I want to pick up with you as well. How does your average person make sense of all the data, all the reporting? It's good in terms of prices. It's difficult in terms of foreclosures. How does the average person make sense of all this and decide what to do when it comes to their own housing situation?
I think the first stop is to get, if you're in the market to maybe buy a house, to go to your lender and see what kind of price range you can afford. Where's your own personal sweet spot in terms of what you can afford? And that depends a great deal on other debt that you have, your incomes, how reliable your income is. And as you mentioned, there are new regulations that are coming down the pike that will have a significant effect on your ability to qualify for a given mortgage. So I think the first stop is there. The next thing is look at your employment situation. If you're fairly confident that you're going to have your job and maybe have a better job going forward, but not lose your job, not lose your overtime, then you're probably a little more inclined to step into this market. I think that we're going to see a more modest increase this year. Depending on where you measure from where to where on home prices in New Hampshire, they were up around 8% during the year. Year over year, a little bit lower. The numbers are kind of squirrely. They really jump around a lot from month to month. So, but basically, home prices are up a bit and interest rates are up a bit. So if you're sitting on the sidelines and you're close to jumping in, I think it's probably a good time to jump in.
Well, it's interesting. Speaking of psychology again, Russ, I have read that younger people, young adults, are just less interested. They've seen the whole housing crash and they just say, oh, that looks like a mess. I don't want to get involved in that.
I think it's a double whammy for young households. On the one hand, there is a little bit less interest because the investment angle of owning a home has weakened considerably, given the kind of statistics that Dave spoke about a minute ago. But also the ability to buy is down. We have the highest ratio of student loans in the country and the highest balances. So so a lot of young households just can't get in. And if you think about it, rents are high, as Ignatius said, so it's harder to save. And if you do save, interest rates are very low. So those savings aren't growing very fast. So it's hard to accumulate a down payment when you've got a lot of student debt. Job quality in the state stinks. So it's very tough for first-time buyers.
Interesting. Ignatius, what do you think?
I know you opened, Laura, with a comment about the new mortgage regulations, but we shouldn't forget Russ's point. The first step is educated borrowers. And there's great resources in New Hampshire on our website and a whole assortment of housing counseling organizations in New Hampshire to help people determine if they are ready for home ownership. And we also have online home buyer education. So we'll talk about mortgage regulation, but a well-educated and informed borrower is one of the key things to housing stability.
Well, what about the idea, Ignatius, that young people saw what happened to homeowners in the mid-2000s and they just say, forget it. It's too messy and it's too tricky. And as Russ said, the wages are not what they used to be.
Yeah, we're hearing a lot of that and we're seeing it in our data. Our median age at New Hampshire Housing and our focus is first-time home buyers has leaped to 34. And we've seen people saying we're concerned about our jobs. We change jobs more often. We saw the crisis occur. We're going to wait. The reality is it is an opportunity. If you have a stable job, know you can stay in a place for 5 to 7 years, great opportunity with the sales prices where they are and the interest rates where they are.
All right. Well, Dave, I want to go to you, too. After a short break, we'll have more conversation about New Hampshire housing coming up. We'll take your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Coming up, we'll take a look at how some of these trends that we're talking about have affected the rental market. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. As a public radio service, the opinions and insights of our listeners drives much of what we do at NHPR. You can make your voice heard when you become a member of our Community Advisory Board. Find out more and fill out an application at nhpr.org. More on the New Hampshire housing market on The Exchange, then a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. Increasing reliance on railways for shipping oil, raising calls for new safety rules. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Great Glen Trails Outdoor Center, offering cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, snow tubing, and daily winter tours to Mount Washington's tree line aboard the snow coach, greatglentrails.com. And from New Hampshire's community colleges, committed to increasing the number of science, technology, engineering, and math graduates in New Hampshire, ccsnh.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the housing sector here in the Granite State, and we invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send an email to exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. As we look ahead to housing in 2014, we want to know your experiences. If you're in the market, you're buying a home or selling a home or renting, what are you seeing and what do you think we have all learned from the housing crash of the last decade? Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Dave Solomon, just picking up with you, something that Ignatius said before the break that I thought was real interesting. He said the average age now of a first-time home buyer is 34. I'm struck by that.
Well, I think that speaks to the shrinkage of the buyer cohort group. There are just very there are fewer buyers. Both gentlemen have alluded to the very attractive nature of the housing market right now for a qualified buyer. So if you can qualify for a mortgage, have the ability to attract one, and have a desire to obtain a house, there's absolutely no reason you wouldn't be in the market right now. So that just means that a lot of people who would otherwise be home buyers either can't qualify or do not have the interest in acquiring a home at this time. And we can't underestimate the impact of that baby boomer cohort group having moved through the home buying years. That's a big bulge in the population that is now more getting into a buy-down mode. So we are just seeing a very significant shrinkage in the pool of buyers in New Hampshire due to the fact that there's just fewer young people in our country and in our state in particular, and due to the fact that the employment picture has changed. There are simply limited if there's actually almost no possibility for a low-skilled or no-skilled person to get a job that's going to enable them to get a house. That
wow.
wasn't true in the 90s.
So demographics are a factor, but also
economics,
the wages that Russ talked about.
As well. So I think we may be seeing a permanent restructuring, a downsizing in the volume of buyers with the baby boom having moved through, the elimination of well-paying low-skilled or no-skilled jobs, and a different attitude among young people that they want to retain their mobility, they like the urban setting, and they haven't bought into the 50s, 60s buy a home in suburbia like their baby boomer parents did.
Very interesting. Generational attitudes changing. Sounds like a great time, Russ Thiebaud, to be a person who builds rental housing. It sounds like that's where the growth is.
Actually, it is. My firm's been doing some market feasibility studies for rental housing. We haven't done them for 25 or 30 years.
Really? But now, why is that?
It's the demand. If you look at young households, as Dave pointed out, they want to stay mobile. They don't have great jobs. They like an urban lifestyle. They're not as acclimated to buying the single family, the house with the white picket fence. But if you go forward, the numbers get a little scary. Going forward, it'll get to the point where now about 1 in 4, 1 in 5 households is age 65 and over. Within 10 years, which isn't that long, it'll be 1 in 3. The number of senior households, meaning age 65 and over, is growing rapidly in the state going forward, and it's because people are aging in place. Conversely, the number of young households is going to be declining under age 65. So who's going to buy all these boomer houses when it's time to downsize? We have a shrinking population of young households, out-migration of young people in the state, and an age structure that's unbalanced. So, and that affects the housing market.
Maybe some of those big old houses will get divided up into apartments or communal living, or, I mean,
you're
thinking outside the box here, right?
You're already seeing that among young households, doubling up, renting out a bedroom to somebody else. So it's changing a little.
Ignatius, jump in, and then we'll go to our callers.
I wanted to jump in on the rental production side. I think one of the biggest challenges is we are seeing a shift towards rental. We've seen historically high rents in New Hampshire that have remained high, but we don't see much rental production. The cost of building, the difficulty of locating and getting through the local process, the lack of utilities in a lot of different areas really makes rental production a huge challenge, and you really cannot afford to produce the new units except in the southern part of the state and the seacoast. Other areas, it's almost impossible to build market rate rental units.
Now, we did an interview with an author about 6 months or a year ago. She'd done a whole book on what she called snob zoning in New England, where people don't want rental housing in their communities outside of the urban areas like Concord or Manchester. What do you think? Do we see snob zoning in New Hampshire?
Well, I it's very difficult. It's a challenge. And in my prior job, I actually appeared before planning boards across the state to try to get new affordable housing developed. And it was always a battle. And the good news is that a lot of towns are looking at the whole workforce housing issue. There is a new workforce housing statute in New Hampshire. And the goal is to try to break down the barriers, not to take away local control, but to ensure that there is an opportunity to build rental housing for our workforce.
All right, let's take some calls, gentlemen. Our number here in the exchange again for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Post a comment there or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Kim's calling in from Dover. Hi, Kim. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm thinking about, I was probably in my mid-30s before I was able to afford a home. And even though we stayed in a very a low-income place and saved for years to get to that spot, we still needed family financial help to get there. And thankfully, I have it. But a lot of people don't. And we wouldn't be where we are without my family assisting us. And, but, I'm wondering how much that plays into getting into a home for the first time.
So your parents gave you a down payment, Kim, to help get started. Yeah.
No, they... You know what? They didn't. We saved a lot. We had a lot of money. We had thousands of dollars in savings. We saved for years to get there.
Sure.
But then the closing costs were a little bit more, or then this had to be done, and it was a little bit here, and it was like all those smaller things that really added up that we wouldn't have been able to do it.
All right. Kim, thanks a lot for the call. This is real interesting, sort of generations helping each other. That's a traditional story of parents helping young adult children get into that first home. Ignatius, what do you think of Kim's call?
Thank you, Kim, for your call. I think this is a challenge. And as Russ mentioned earlier, the high student loan debt has made it harder for young people to save. The reality is that parents are still helping out, and there are some down payment and cash assistance programs. New Hampshire Housing has one to help low and moderate income borrowers get into homes. And the good news is that the national housing system recognizes that not everybody will be able to come up with a large down payment. So there still is mortgage financing for people who want to do low down payment loans. And there is some help with cash assistance that you can get for your down payment.
Russ, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that the other thing to think about on this, too, is that the lending standards, rightly or wrongly, have tightened up. It used to be that a credit score of 630 or 640 could get you into a mortgage. Today it's 730, 740 is the average. So the lending standards have tightened up, and they may tighten up yet more with this new qualified mortgage and the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which I think we'll probably get into in
And let's get into that. Kim, thank you again for calling. This gets us right into a big question that I wanted to ask all of you. And Dave, I'll turn to you first. New rules that just went into place from the federal government this month, tightening up lending requirements so that another so-called bubble doesn't happen and then burst and then who knows what, as we saw earlier. What are you hearing from people about these new rules that could make it tougher to get a loan?
Most people appreciate the need to establish underwriting requirements that don't result in millions of people getting mortgages that can't afford them. It's bad for everybody.
They call this a return to responsible
lending.
It's bad
for the economy.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd be interested to discover how significantly different these guidelines are from the way mortgages were traditionally issued in the 80s and the 90s. Up until, 2002, 3, 4, 5, you had to have a job. You had to have a demonstrated history of saving up money for a down payment. And you had to have verified income, and all of these requirements existed. And it's just common sense lending. So
all this hand-wringing about it's too tough, it'll keep people out of the market, it'll dampen housing's recovery, you're not buying it, Dave.
I think it's a return to sanity.
What do you think, Russ?
Well, I agree with Dave to a great degree. There was an awful lot. Part of the housing bubble that burst was driven by lending standards there was no standard at all. You just had to tell them how much money you made and whether you had a job or not, and you could get a mortgage.
You didn't have to document
that.
There were
a lot of teaser rates where you'd go in and your payment's going to be $1,200 a month, and people would say, $1,200 a month? We can buy the house. We can move in. But what was unsaid or not said clearly enough in a way that the borrower could understand is that payment was going to go to $2,000 a month in 2 years, because it was a teaser rate on the front end to get you to take the mortgage. A mortgage broker got his fee, passed the mortgage along to somebody else, and ended up in Germany or Sweden or something. And the accountability between the borrower and the lender was totally destroyed. On the other hand, I think 43% may prove to be too rigid a standard. I was looking at
43% is what? Just remind us.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. 43% is your annual debt payments, including the mortgage payment, car payment, student loan payments, cannot be more than 43% of your total income.
Okay, household so they income. Assess your total debt before they give you the loan.
Yeah, total debt payments before they give you the loan. And they can lend you if your ratio is higher than 43%, but they're risking having that mortgage come back on them. So I think that might be a little tight. I've seen data showing that the median now is around 41, 42%. It's very close to where things are, and it might be a bit tight. Time will tell.
I remember applying for a mortgage in the 80s, and the standard was 38%.
That was the total home price to income,
right.
Income to total home price. This is a little different.
All right, let's take another call, gentlemen. And then, Ignatius, I want to ask you about these new rules, too, because there's especially concern about low to moderate income folks being able to get a new home because of these rules. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Dave's calling in from Concord. Hi, Dave. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Good morning. This may be just a little off subject, but I just wondered in thinking about, you know, lack of individuals being interested in buying homes at this point in time, how much property taxes in New Hampshire have to do with that situation.
Dave, thank you for the call. And I want to let you know, Dave, that we also got an email from Jen in Newmarket who says, one sentence, the burden of property taxes in New Hampshire is rather alarming. So you and Jen are on the same page there. Dave, what do you think, Ignatius? How much do property taxes pay into people's hesitation, perhaps, in buying a home?
Yeah, there's no question when you look at buying a home, you really look at what is my monthly payment going to be for my mortgage, for my insurance, and for my property taxes. So there's no question that higher property taxes can have a hindering effect on folks who are looking at affordability.
Yeah. So what are you hearing from people? They say, ooh, this mortgage looks good, but I can't handle the property taxes? I mean, are people...
No, I think in New Hampshire, we're so trained already, we know the property taxes are high. So the good news is working with realtors and lenders going in, knowing what can you afford monthly, and then you can do the breakdown between mortgage interest and property taxes going in. So we're pretty informed in that respect in New Hampshire.
I've got a question too, Russ, and I can see you want to jump in. But Dave, to you first. You know, we talked about a lot of people in New Hampshire choosing rental over ownership for various reasons that we've discussed. And one reason people sometimes say is, well, gee, then I'm not stuck with property taxes. But aren't the property taxes to some extent folded into that rental price? I mean, the landlord has to make his or her.
Well, I'm sure the property taxes are a factor in establishing rental rates.
So you're not scooting out of it by renting, really.
No, and historically, they've never been a big disincentive to in-migration, particularly from Massachusetts, where the people... young professionals would run the numbers and say, well, even with the property tax being a little higher, without an income tax or a sales tax, I'm still going to have a low overall tax burden. And that's something that I think plays into the current recovery or the tepid nature of the recovery in New Hampshire is we're not seeing the in-migration from Massachusetts. Their housing market is very strong. They're getting very close to high numbers on values. They're getting a lot of buyer interest. Usually in past strong housing economies, that would translate into a lot more interest in southern New Hampshire by Massachusetts buyers.
Well, one more email on this property tax issue. This is from Meredith, who says, one thing is no one is mentioning. Of course, we're mentioning it now, but New Hampshire's property tax is a huge disincentive to buying. Meredith says, as a first-time buyer this year, I'm paying $8,000 in tax. Feels like renting your own house. There is some sticker shock there. Go ahead, Russ.
Well, I think it's a problem, particularly one of the chunks of data that I looked at recently was overpayment among older New Hampshire residents that have no mortgage, and they're still overpaying in terms of utilities and taxes. So if you're elderly and on a fixed income, you own your house, maybe you've paid off your mortgage, hopefully you have, you still have $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a year in property taxes to pay on a Social Security check that may be $20,000. So it gets to, the taxes are a burden at probably both ends of the housing market, meaning it's a burden for elderly, whether you have or haven't paid off your mortgage, and it's a burden for first-time buyers because it cuts into your ability to pay.
All right, Meredith, thank you for that email. Again, the email address for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You know, Ignatius McClellan, I did want to go back to you about the new rules that went into place from the federal government. I've read a lot of concern about low to moderate income people perhaps not being able to own a home, even if they want to. We heard from Russ and Dave on this. I wonder what you think.
Well, first, let's start from in terms of the Great Recession, as I guess we're calling it. A lot of the problems in the mortgage industry were not with the mortgage industry. It was the economic impact on individuals. So what we're seeing was job loss, loss of income, and medical issues really was the reason that so many people struggled to pay their mortgages, which then fed the Great Recession. So let's just be clear that part of the problem was an economic issue, not just a regulatory issue. So we do have these new regulations in response that aim to go back to responsible lending, a lot of which was going ahead of time. And these regulations just went into effect January 10th. But for the last two or three years, I can tell you the credit quality of the borrowers, the quality of the appraisals has been significantly increased before this. I think one of the concerns is even if access remains available for all borrowers, the impact on the lenders, it's a huge regulatory burden for the lenders and the complexity for the borrower. As we add more regulations, we make it more complex for borrowers. So,
are you telling me that stack of papers that you sign when you buy a house is going to get even taller?
Yeah, I was with my sister during her closing, and we had read the documents ahead of time. She signed for 45 minutes because we had already read the documents, just signing the documents. So it's become, in some respects, too complex. And the question is, when is it too complex for lenders and borrowers? Overall, I think it'll be fine.
All right, let's take another call. This is Sarah in Concord. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an anecdote about the home buying process. My husband and I purchased our first home this April, and we thought that the process was much more complicated than we had expected. The only debt that he and I had was a new car that we had bought because we were expecting our first child and we needed a bigger automobile. And because of a lack of debt, our attempts to get a mortgage required us to prove payment of debt in the past, in the recent past. So I had to reproduce copies of every single rent check I had written for over a year just to prove we would be able to pay our mortgage in the long run. I'm not sure if your guest can speak to those kind of regulations, but it was a bit hair-pulling.
Yeah, Sarah, congratulations, by the way. And this relates exactly to what you just said, Ignatius.
No, and I think it is important. Sarah makes a great point that we have a system based on credit. So you have to have borrowed and established a credit record in order to borrow. The good news is, as Sarah points out, there are alternative ways to establish your credit for borrowing.
All right, more of our conversation about New Hampshire's housing market coming up, including a conversation with someone from the New Hampshire Realtors Association. We'll get his perspective on the housing market. A lot more of your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning. Coming up on the Diane Rehm Show, the dangers of a sharp rise in shipping crude oil by rail and calling for new safety rules. That's the Diane Rehm Show at 10 on NHPR.
Tuesday night, an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's State of the Union address. I'm Robert Siegel. Join me for in-depth analysis and reaction from members of Congress. You'll also hear the Republicans' response to the president's speech. An NPR News special, President Obama's State of the Union Address.
Follow the coverage Tuesday night at 9 on NHPR and NHPR.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Harper, New Hampshire, celebrating its 50th season with a one-time performance of Carmen on Saturday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at the Palace Theater in Manchester. Information at opera.nh.org. 940, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a hot debate over a new bill on gun regulations and mental health. Join us for that conversation tomorrow on The Exchange. Today in The Exchange, we're discussing New Hampshire's housing sector, and we invite your questions and comments, observations, experiences, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. And joining us now by phone is Bill Weidecker. He's past president of the New Hampshire Realtors Association. And Bill, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Good morning. It's my pleasure.
What part of the state are you working in, Bill, first of all?
I work in the southern part of the state of New Hampshire, so Hillsborough County, Merrimack County to some extent, Rockingham County.
And how about your region, first off, Bill, and then I'll ask you about the whole state. Is the market strong where you are? What's your feeling?
Oh, I would say that the market's very strong. I think those three counties are the most populated counties in the state, and so as the most populated counties go, so does the state. So we're experiencing a very robust market here in southern New Hampshire.
What do you think is leading to that, or what's driving that, Bill?
Well, anytime you see a downturn in the market that we experienced, really starting in 2008 in earnest, you end up creating what I'm going to call opportunity. You know, when you couple a decrease in prices somewhere between 25% and 35% over the course of 4 or 5 years before you start to dig out of it, and then you couple that with very low interest rates, the lowest interest rate seen in generations. You couple those two things together, that spells opportunity. And so many people that would not have been able to afford a house in 2005, 6, or 7 were able to buy in 10, 11, and 12, and 13.
How about the greater Boston market? How does that affect your market in southern New Hampshire, Bill? I've heard that there's some strong linkages there. If prices go up in the Boston area, people come to southern New Hampshire.
Well, I think it's important to note when you look at Boston in general, and a pretty good handle as my fiance sells real estate in Boston, and prices never really collapsed in the city, in the neighborhoods of the city of Boston. They never really collapsed, and as a matter of fact, you'd be staggered by what the prices are going on in some of those neighborhoods today.
Wow.
So as prices never really decreased, and now they're rapidly increasing, that spells real opportunity for people in the commutable parts of this state.
I want to take off your Southern New Hampshire hat, if I could, Bill, and put on your all New Hampshire Realtors Association hat. As I said, your past president. How about the overall state? What would you say the sentiment is statewide among realtors?
Well, I think statewide people feel generally good about the marketplace, and what I mean by that is that even some of the areas that may not have recovered as quickly as the populated counties, they're experiencing a better market than they had in the past few years. So I think generally people feel pretty good about the real estate market here in the state of New Hampshire. We saw about a 9% increase statewide for single-family homes last year. We saw about a 7% increase in condominiums.
This is the price
volume,
you're talking about, Bill, right?
That's correct,
yeah.
In price. Now, the volume of sales in condominiums came roaring back in 2013. We saw a 17% increase in condominium sales. So,
17% increase in condo sales last year.
Yes.
Wow.
And now part of that is I believe condominiums are the first hit and the hardest hit in any economic downturn. At least my experience has shown me that over the last 31 years. And so somewhere along the line, the hardest hit have to recover. And we saw that happen with condominium sales last year for certain.
One more question for you, if I could, Bill, please. We've heard some optimism from you about the market and prices going up and so forth. What are some of the concerns right now among realtors, especially these new federal rules that just kicked in this month?
Well, you know, the federal rules are the regulations are always things that we need to play by those rules. So they are what they are. If there's any concern out there, I would say it's not that amongst the realtor family throughout the state. It's this. It's inventory. One word, inventory. Because if you don't have something to sell to somebody that's looking to buy, that poses a problem. And inventory levels are low right now. So for those that are out there, if I have any message for somebody that's looking to sell sometime in 2014 or toying with the idea, don't wait. You stand a really good opportunistic market right now if you're able to put your home on the market in the next 30 to 60 days, because there's a lack of inventory, which means a lack of competition, which could pose this answer, better sales price.
All right. Good to talk to you. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you very much.
That's Bill Weidecker, past president of the New Hampshire Realtors Association and a realtor himself in southern New Hampshire. The number for you to join us with our conversation about New Hampshire's housing market, whether it's home buying, rentals, condos, is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Dave Solomon, I wanted to ask you about what he said, and I think you've written about this too. Boy, time to get into condos. 17% increase in condo sales over the past year.
Well, as Bill pointed out, that's because they had so much room to improve. They went down so low that as part of the recovery, they're going to show a significant number. The housing single-family home prices in New Hampshire did not drop as low as the national average, and certainly not as low as condos. So we're seeing a slower return. But this demographic of an aging baby boomer cohort looking to get out of their houses with all those bedrooms now that the kids are grown and getting into a condo or a 55-plus housing development is certainly a factor in that growth of condominiums as well.
Yeah, I think that going back to what Bill said, right now looking at the math of it all, we have about an 8-month inventory in the state, meaning if houses continue to sell at the pace they have over the last 12 months, it would take 8 months to sell everything, which is low.
That doesn't sound like a long time.
It isn't for us. At the bottom of the market, when things were really bad, it was twice that. It was 16, 18 months. And an 8-month inventory typically supports two things, rising prices and higher levels of new construction. So Bill may well be right. The thing that concerns me going forward is the interest rate outlook and the Fed easing back on their purchasing of mortgage-backed securities at the rate we'll find out tomorrow or the next day if they're going to do that again. But they dropped it back by $10 billion a month.
That's right. We've got a new Federal Reserve chairwoman coming in, Janet Yellen. So could be some policy changes.
If you look at last year, nationally, you could kind of divide it into two. The first 6 months were excellent. The second 6 months were slower, primarily because interest rates rose 100 basis points, which adds in New Hampshire here about $2,000 a year in interest cost of buying the median home. So rising rates are an issue.
Well, and it's interesting. He talked about, and you talked about, Russ, inventory, meaning not enough stuff to buy, right? Here's an email from Rob who says, is there any hope for a decrease in the cost of construction? We own several plots of land that we would like to sell but have not been able to. Construction costs are so high that people just aren't building new houses. Rob says, owning land used to be a great investment because, quote, they aren't making any more of it. But these days, it seems you can't get rid of it. So this gets to that problem. Ignatius, I'd love your thoughts there.
No, I think we haven't seen a lot of new home construction. I know the home builders are trying to work hard to increase the building of new homes in New Hampshire, but it is difficult because construction has become so expensive. The other concern is during the economic downturn, some of the subcontractors basically said, I'm out of here. I don't want to do the subcontracting anymore. It's just too cyclical a business. And so question about the availability. If I could make a quick point on the rates, I mean,
sure.
I think the big issue is that mortgage interest rates, I think there's common agreement, they will be going up. The question is how fast, how much, and when. But it is very important to keep in mind that historically, even if the interest rates go up another point, they're still historically very good interest rates. So while there is an impact on buying power as the rates go up, the bigger question is what's the market perception having been used to 3.5% interest rates? Now we're at 4.5. How are they going to be at 5.5? And the reality is 5.5 is still a very good interest rate.
Well, that's true. It's all perception, isn't it? Because 15 years ago, if you said you can get a 5.5% mortgage rate, people would say, wow, are you kidding me? You know, and now it seems like, well, that's not 3.5 or 4. Go ahead, Russ.
My first house was financed with an NHHFA loan here in New Hampshire, Ignatius's agency, and it was 8.8%. That was the attractive rate, and that was a long time ago, though. As far as new construction goes, the other dimension about it, I don't think the cost of new construction is going to go down. But what's, I think, relevant, too, is the gap between the cost of building a new home of a certain size and the cost of buying an existing home of the same size. And with home prices down 20 or 25%, even if construction costs stayed constant and material prices have gone up. Even if they stayed constant, the gap is much wider now than it was, say, in the last decade.
Dave, I wonder what you're hearing, too, either from potential buyers or realtors or bankers about how changes at the Federal Reserve, changes in Federal Reserve policies might affect the housing market right now. Are they worried? Are people worried about
this? Anything that tightens up the guidelines for qualification is going to suppress the buyer's market to some extent. So there's naturally a concern about that. New construction that the emailer alluded to is very challenging because historically we've always been told the price of land is so high that if you buy a house lot, you have to build a $400,000 house on it.
Just to make it worth it.
To make it worth it. And those kind of houses are just really not selling now. So that's a tough proposition. But if the inventory is shrinking and the interest rates are at such a historic low and the prices are a historic low, the dynamics suggest that we should be seeing more significant appreciation in pricing, and we're not. So it's clearly still a buyer's market. And
yeah.
If people were waiting for the bottom of the pricing and the bottom of the interest, that happened in 2011. So I think the general forces in the economy relative to jobs and economic security are suppressing what all the other indicators suggest should be a really robust seller's market.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you. The idea that, you know, the table is set, but people aren't coming to the table because the wages just aren't keeping up. Interesting.
The general sense of economic security is there.
Yeah, my quick comment is, in terms of the inventory, we shouldn't forget that there are a lot of homes at good price points that could use a little rehabilitation, the so-called fixer-upper. The challenge is with the new younger generation, they don't want to do fixer-uppers. They want to move into the house that their mom and dad has. And if we could train them that, you know, you start at the entry level, you do the fixer-upper, and then you move up the chain, I think that's a better educational message for our young folks.
Well, as a non-fixer-upper myself, I've got some sympathy. I have no interest in doing any of that. So I'm kind of voting with them there, Ignatius. I want to share an email with you. This is a great point and one we haven't discussed yet, gentlemen. This is from John. He says, please ask your guests to comment on the state of the commercial real estate market. I see a lot of empty big box stores around the state. John says limited partnerships and real estate investment trusts established 10, 12 years ago are all maturing with little hope of garnering rental rates of prior years. Boy, we've seen this in Concord, Russ. You know, big box stores moving in and out. A couple stores at the mall here in Concord just closed out recently, and there's been no talk about who's going to take their places.
Yeah, I think with very low interest rates available to commercial developers and to retailers, large big box retailers in the last decade, there was definitely an overbuilding that occurred, and we're feeling the effects of it. I mean, there were large big box retailers in Hooksett that barely opened. I mean, the paint was still wet, and they closed the store.
Really?
So things have shifted dramatically. I think just last week, Walmart announced a major layoff, something like 2,000 employees, and Walmart, you know, was largest retailer in the country. So if we look here in New Hampshire, the vacancy rates are in the 15 to 20% range for office and industrial space. That's high historically. It didn't get worse over the last 2 years. Got a little bit better in some subsectors of the market. Peace Tradeport is getting some traction again with new occupants moving in. But by and large, it's a soft market on the commercial side, primarily as a result of overbuilding. We had the Merrimack Outlet Center, premium outlet center open, which was 350,000 square feet. That was a major addition. But we haven't had much. That's now about 2 years, I think, since it opened. We haven't had much other new stuff open in the state. So it's been somewhat quiet.
Well, it's a great point, John. Thanks for raising it. You know, Dave Solomon, I think you've covered some of these stories. I mean, we've seen Borders go away. We've seen Shaw's close down some of its stores. There was another supermarket chain. Was it Stop and Shop? Is that the one that went away?
No one's more familiar with
that. JCPenney's is struggling.
Yeah, the newspaper business has seen it firsthand. We've lost buckets full of major advertisers, department stores, automotive parts dealers, furniture businesses, once major players in the market, just evaporate. And so certainly there's going to be a lot of commercial vacancies in the retail sector. And in the business enterprise sector, the extent to which three or four really smart engineers need to rent an office to start their software company, that isn't as much of a factor as it used to be. The need for office space is diminishing in the new economy as well. So,
yeah, it kind of makes me wonder who's going to go into these huge empty big boxes.
I think there's a bit of a significant surplus in commercial square footage, and you have newspapers abandoning their large plants, consolidating their printing operations and hoping to move into smaller buildings in the inner city as they had been prior to the 1980s, and that's adding to the square footage as well.
All right. Well, John, thanks again for the point. And all of you, just looking ahead, you know, there's so much data involved, so many numbers. Ignatius McClellan, what are the one or two numbers that you're going to be keeping an eye on this year as a way to assess what's going on in housing?
So the big number for us, one is going to be the number of foreclosures. And so I'll put out the number 211 again for anybody who's at risk for free homeowner counseling. And the bigger issue is not so much a number as what's going to happen in Washington, D.C. Because right now, basically, our mortgage industry is federally subsidized. And the question is, when will the national government pull out and private capital come back in? There seems to be a strong consensus in Washington, D.C. that that needs to occur. But there is no agreement about the roadway, the timing, and the transition to a new housing finance system. So what we're looking at mostly is, what will this new housing finance system look like? How will it take care of low and moderate income people in New Hampshire?
Those rules and regulations that we talked about that just kicked in. Ross, real quick to you, what are you going to be watching?
Interest rates, primarily. Interest rates and job quality, job growth and job quality. I think we're out of the cyclical part of this recovery, and we're into a recovery where we're going to have prices move with income and interest rates. So I think one last thing I'd say is people should be very careful about variable rate mortgages. More and more people are taking them. Be careful, it could bite you down the road.
All right, Russ, good to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Great to be here.
Russ Tebow, President of Applied Economic Research in Laconia. Dave Solomon, thank you for your time. Really appreciate
it. My pleasure.
Dave Solomon, business reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader in Sunday News. And Ignatius McClellan, thank you also for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Ignatius McClellan, Director of Home Ownership at New Hampshire Housing. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Nate Graby. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Knoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Canoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, mental health checks and gun rights. A new bill would prohibit gun sales to some with mental illness. Supporters say it's a common-sense public safety measure. But opposition has been fierce from some gun rights groups and from advocates who say the mentally ill are being unfairly singled out and are far more likely to be victims than perpetrators of violence. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
New Hampshire Public Radio, the Diane Rehm Show next at 10. New Hampshire weather, cloudy with snow showers today, accumulations around an inch in the southern half of the state, mixing with some sleet along the coast, accumulations 1 to 3 inches from the upper valley north. It's going to be turning windy, highs today from mid-20s to lower 30s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Northway Bank, proudly serving the financial needs of its customers with 18 banking centers throughout New Hampshire and also online at northwaybank.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson,
99.5,
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3,
and WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It is 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Since 2005, crude oil shipments by rail have risen by more than 400%. The increase is largely because of the boom in shale oil production in the U.S. and Canada. Concerns about recent accidents led the National Transportation